Senate Judiciary Committee is called to order. It's 1:37. It's April the 11th. And we do have a call to conduct business today, consisting of myself, Senator Fire, Senator John Conville, Vice Chair, Senator Mia Rosado, and Senator Bill Mulcahy. We have a couple of items that have already appeared on the agenda today. Just for those that might be online or in the room, for Senate Bill 211 on the recovery of false claims for state funds by the Senate Judiciary Committee, we're going to set that bill aside. We will hear Senate Bill 108, the Alaska Securities Act, by Governor, and then Senate Bill number 113, the drugs for the terminate bill. So if we can have the Governor's representatives come forward and explain Senate Bill 108, and just to note for the committee members, we're working off of version W, which incorporates the Senate Library of Commerce changes. Welcome to you, please, on the record. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Anson. I'm the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities, and it's my pleasure to give you a brief overview of the Alaska Securities Act. You're right. Senate Bill 108 separates security statutes from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, otherwise known as ANCSA, related statutes to reduce confusion and to improve understanding of old acts. It lists out the securities provisions into Amendment 4555. It recognizes that corporate security industry standards and terms. It emphasizes the benefits of less to make it easier for businesses, entrepreneurs, and investors to understand their rights, responsibilities, and opportunities in Alaska through adopting many of the Uniform Securities Act provisions from the 2002 Model Act. If you turn to business hands using Alaska entities that are harming Alaskans by increasing civil penalties and providing resources from those penalties for investor, consumer, and entrepreneurial education. It also enhances penalties against those who harm older Alaskans. Madam Chair, I have a summary of a few changes from version A to W, as well as a brief section on that. I'd be pleased to draw your Alaska committee wishes. Of course, those documents and more are already in your record.
Okay. What are the wishes of the committee in terms of reviews today?
Probably a good year of changes for you to be more appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'd be looking for.
Sorry, I'm so just let's focus on the review of the changes.
Certainly. Generally, the structural changes, the order of the sections have been reorganized, but Senate Bill 108 was drafted with the new 4555 or 4536 chapter at the beginning of the bill with other statutes amended in the article order at the end. So, SB 108 CSW now follows the order of the statutes amended beginning with Title 6. As far as drafting, legislators also make important drafting and legal improvements throughout the bill, including consolidating definitions in Article 7, Section 4556, 740, or 7 to existing definitions in other statutes. As far as the summary of the actual changes, Sections 1 through 24, are renumbered from the original 108A and moved to the front of the bill. Senate Bill 108A, Section 7, which changed AS 21.32.315K, is deleted because variable annuity is removed from the definition of security. We'll talk more about that in definitions. Section 25 is the beginning of the new Alaska Securities Act. Article 1, there are no changes. Article 2, exemptions from registration of securities. Small interstate securities offerings referred to often as crowdfunding was removed at the request of Senate Library of Commerce. Senate Bill 146 contains those similar provisions. Article 3, registration of securities and notice offering at fair covered securities, as well as Article 4, particular agents, investment advisor representatives, and fair covered advisors, and Article 5, voting liabilities. There are no such changes. Article 6, Administration and Judicial Review. 4556.605E relating to Securities Education and Training Fund was moved to a new section, 4556.625, by entitled Securities Investor Education and Training Fund. That section, 4556.60, authorization budgets were combined with section 4556635 applicability of the chapter. Section 4556660 civil liability and also section 4556665 rescission offers. The legal rate of interest for rescission and civil enforcement is the legal rate of interest under AS 09530.970 or 8% a year, whichever is greater. And finally, Article 7, miscellaneous and additional general provisions, two definitions were changed. Section 23 for older person, it was formerly older housing. If an older person is age 60 or older, and it's adapted for an existing section, and section 32, security, clerical immunity, is deviated from the definition of security. There are no other substantial changes in the bill.
Thank you very much. Questions? First of all, the definition. I'm sorry, I see older license, but I understand why. And also, even more depressing to note that it's 60 instead of I'm really old. So 5 years old. I know you told me when we met that this was going out from the Exo statute that it really hasn't been added in as a vehicle as a result of Congress. So this reorders it. Exactly what are some of these changes in the legal funding and on the penalty it looks like. A civil issue. My guess is, tell me if I get it wrong, but it's for ease of application.
Senator Goldberg, you're right. It is for ease of application to serve the two statutes. There's a lot of confusion about when the statutes related to securities and which statutes relate more to the last settlement and proxy solicitations. And so it will be much easier both for the NASA program, which is really very different than the typical securities issue. So it should be much easier for the public and the corporations to understand.
Why was there one that
you thought was this particular thing? Through the chair, Senator Godwin, the insurance industry was concerned about including very liability as part of the Securities Act. While it's included as part of the Uniform Act, there were concerns that there would be more regulation over those sections of the industry. While we don't agree, we do understand that they'd like more information on that, and so there will probably be a time in the future that we discuss that issue again. Senator Lugosi, this one is there right now, which is through the Insurance Act. Through the chair, Senator Lugosi, typically, and of course, there are different variations. In other states, you might go through both securities and insurance, or that it regulates a particular portion through the insurance side and a particular portion through the security side. So that's something we want to find out more in the state of Alaska before we bring that again.
Have you had many complaints over the years about my letter formulas or the documents that they change sometimes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lugosi, are there any open complaints? And the insurance division has handled them. We assisted. We also received complaints and we've worked with the insurance division to resolve them. Often, the variable in these salespeople are also registered as security salespeople. So often, if there is a problem or a concern, it will bridge over the two divisions and we work very well together.
Thank you very much. Okay, I have two other people in line who have questions. That's Renee Wilda with the Assistant Attorney General. And then Christine Mayer is the Chief of Imports and Securities. So are there any questions for any of you?
time. I just want to know if they're satisfied with what we're missing off the room. If there's any concerns with that.
Did you follow that question from Senator Cogdill? Please, what law is mailed? Okay, thank you. Is there anybody in the audience wishing to testify on the committee substitute resolution number 108? Is there anyone online? Okay, have you seen them?
Well, what is the testimony, Senator Cogdill? Madam Chair, this is what they thought. Sort of the buzzword for the industry, I would move to move to the next level. It's not a simple policy, of course, hopefully, we have the recommendations and address customers.
Thank you. Is there an objection to that motion? The hearing is seeing none. And the CS was on bill number 108. And there are recommendations and comments will be more in the Senate Budget Committee. Thank you. Okay, next we have Senate Bill No. 113 by Senator Murkowski. We need to adopt a new substitute amendment version. Senator Cogdill.
I'm sorry, I'm going to move that we just take up the CS Senate Bill No. 113, Health and Social Services version B, as I'm going to handle it.
Senator Cogdill, okay, here you see that we have the request. Cogdill.
This bill is a bill that's passed in the 47 states. It's typically passed unanimously or with very strong bipartisan support. There's another 22 additional states that have been more considering this bill, including Alaska. And the administration headed by General McCurl, who's also for the Colorado Institute. He was online, and he flew out last night, and he's really a good combination of us beyond this legislation. It's just real quick, it's estimated that over a million Americans die from terminal illnesses every year. And if we go see that exhausted all FDA-approved vaccines and clinical trials become the next step, however, those patients who attempt to gain entry into a clinical trial, only less than 3% are accepted. So, in recognition of 97% of patients who are denied access to clinical trials, the FDA has a program known as the Compassionate Use Program. However, of the million people who have terminal illnesses, it's estimated that only about 1,000 have been made through this process. It's an incredibly long bureaucratic process. It takes the application form alone takes about 100 hours for a doctor to complete. And so, this is in response to that. It's simply a bill to try to help those who are terminally ill, really exhausted, good options to have access, a little bit of access to the FDA's Compassionate Use Program, which is shortly a good one. And that's the bill, essence, that you and I are going to be pretty simple, though. The question that I advise back there, and as I mentioned, is to always online if you have any specific questions on it.
Excellent. And did you wish to add anything to the testimony or just leave room for questions? Madam Chairman of the committee, Dr. Perpetti, Sarah Senator Lubowski, I'd like you to walk them through the sections of the bill and the FDA review process if it's the will of the committee. So I'll just leave room for questions, maybe. Yes, please. Okay. So I guess I'll start out by the overall goal of the bill. Which is Senate Bill 113, the bill is to create a legal climate in which these terminal patients can work directly with their doctor and the manufacturer to access this terminal medicine test based on the FDA review process. So, as Senator Lichelsey mentioned, that's currently there's a program with the FDA talking about this program, which is working on the same medication steroid, just what you see. Sort of cutting through the red tape, if you will. The Senate Bill 113 version E has four sections. Section 1 of the bill prohibits state medical board from taking disciplinary action against physicians for prescribing or administering an investigational drug to determine a patient that meets certain criteria. So patients under this section must be
ineligible or unable to participate in an ongoing clinical trial, has considered all other approved treatment options and has provided written consent of the course of the diagnosis as from the label. Section 2 is the new section in ES-965, which establishes that physicians, medical team members, manufacturers, importers, and distributors that are acting in good faith and with reasonable care will not be held liable in the case of injury or death of a terminated outpatient from the use of an investigational drug, provided that informed consent was obtained from the patient and notice of immunity was also given to the patient before they provided that consent. Section 3, as a new section, DOAS-1921-10, sectionally, this is the distribution of new drugs. The new section will allow physicians to prescribe or administer investigational drugs under the conditions as established in Section 1. And finally, Section 4 would prevent the Department of Health and Social Services from requiring a licensed healthcare facility to increase its services solely to accommodate physicians who are prescribing these drugs as laid out in Section 1.
Okay, so first I'm going to go to Part 1, Council 2, or Section 1, on the simple method, put yourself on record and offer testimony, please, start at 113.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Again, my name is Kurt Baldwin. I am a member of the Gold Lawyer Institute in Phoenix, Arizona. The Gold Lawyer Institute is an individual free market policy organization, just over the background, I am the director of the Buffalo Legislature. The SB-113 is roughly I have been to approximately 45 states over the last couple of years testifying to this bill, which commonly is referred to as the Right to Try Bill. I've testified, I've debated FDA officials, I've met with stakeholders, pretty much for every question and potential issue that revolves around the Right to Try Bill innovation. Asking is that it's certainly laid the bill out and what it does effectively. I don't want to reiterate or base that. But I will tell you that I'm available for any questions you may have. And I do want to point out that there are some significant protections in the bill. Two of which, most importantly, are that this is what allows students on the fancy locations that are terminally ill. As Ms. Abby indicated, investigational medicine would be eligible under Right to Try law. This is past the first phase of the FDA approval process. But more importantly, the first phase is a safety testing phase. It requires the process phase is very much because it speaks just by itself. But more importantly, the drug has to be in ongoing clinical trials and ongoing testing somewhere in phase 2 and somewhere in phase 3. And so what we're asking also making what's very important about this bill is that it is designed for those 97% of people that are deemed eligible to participate in clinical trials. Why would the drug have been designed in that manner? Because clinical trials are very important because the drug approval process is very important and right to try bills cannot, by definition,
questions, which I'm certain that I can answer. I'd be happy to do so.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Alden.
Thank you. Thank you for the bill forward to Senator Lang for you, Mr.
Alden.
So, since it has passed in the States, my thinking is it's probably had to be tested on the liability issue or on families that feel that maybe somebody has been coerced into a treatment program. But is that going to be true, or is that a fear that people have that I'd like to see that coming up?
I'm not sure. You know, to date, Senator, you have to remember litigation. The right to trial law says Senator Wilkowski indicated in order to be provided this drug, not only does it turn out to be a very detailed instruction set, but the fact that the doctor obtained it, I can tell you that in practice, both on the right to try and on the compassion thesis, the manufacturers that are going to provide this drug also provide a very significant and detailed before piece of work and liability waiver that is required. In addition, each Amazon would expect to have a similar liability waiver for any repetitive SD-113 for any adverse effect only from the induction of the drug. It doesn't make any sense to have been without practice or anything of that matter. Simply for adverse effects in this investigation of the drug, should those appear.
One other question, and this may be for the sponsor or maybe for you. The section 4, there's a barrier to require licensing data and resources for sole purposes of company and physician's practice. And I need to understand how that actually works. And that's something that I need the sponsor to respond to.
I'm sure that you can, Senator Hockfeld. Certainly, so that provision was added out of conversation with healthcare facility associations, and basically, in doing that, the goal was to prevent any fear of potential for healthcare facilities or hospitals potentially lose their certificate for Medicare or Medicaid, because then they won't be covering the use of these drugs.
Is there something more than the USR?
Other states have passed the solicitation with that provision included.
I thought there was some other liability issue, but it really is the methodology for insurance issues.
Correct. And I will also note that due to that provision of the bill, the Department of Health and Social Services has determined that Senate Bill 113 does not impact their operations in any way. Excellent. Okay. So I will go then to Michael Mahary in Lexington with the 10th Amendment. Michael, if you're there, you hear something better in all the testimony on Senate Bill 113, please.
Yes, my name is Michael Mahary. I'm the National Communications Director for the 10th Amendment Center. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of SB 113. We've been involved with right to trial, which we began in the moment that we heard about the initiative for both the Golden Arches to the new initiative to the Golden Arches Restoration. It is not on the call of people for the information and no claim that that's exactly the right to try it. A lot more person to that and to verify that they
the trial operates its way to stand the gap between federal regulations and the needs of terminal innovation.
to do,
which is all about firearms and safety. It's so governed by lobbyists now and individual interests and stuff like that. But the decision is that he was offering to patients the opportunity to take their own 25 stem cells and reinject them into a uterine growing cartilage. And he was denied that opportunity by the FDA, so he became a professor at Wake Forest University in order to do it and get a pilot program and just do it for free. And there are two other hospitals that have their knee cartilage grown 100% successfully. And it's just a travesty that things like that happen where individuals, whether they're totally ill or whether they're suffering from chronic pain, don't have more opportunities to use innovative scientific techniques to make themselves better. And I hope Alaska continues to stay at the forefront. This is the beginning of it, but enough for many years and how you could carve out kind of an exception for Alaska. But the problem, of course, is the federal government in terms of what happens. But keeping your eye on the ball for those types of things, medical tourism now was indicated by both of the Alaskans testifying, has often become the only safe place of refuge. And I think that's a travesty that living in the freest, supposedly, most innovative place on the earth, the United States of America, and yet our citizens have to fly and bring calls to other places to receive innovative medical care, and particularly when you're terminally ill. So I think it's great, though. And that goes back to the part of the
question. This is not this is a medical question that I think the sponsor or the staff knows. But this is using drugs that the FDA has already got some kind of process on. So under these conditions, are we reporting back to these sites?
The Children's Center in Colville, that's, well, first of all, correct. This council had passed FDA in the ongoing trials of BS213. As far as reporting requirements, that is not included in this legislation. Some states have chosen to include a reporting requirement, I believe Tennessee is one of those states. However, I have been assured that they've been involved in this legislation elsewhere. Our understanding is that manufacturers, as they give consent for the use of their drug, it benefits them greatly to have data provided back to them as to efficacy of their medication. And so in those contracts, that is a requirement both by their compassionate use as well as by data.
So
we're
as long as the industry is watching their drugs, seeing what they do, and the case studies involve them, I think that'd be probably sufficient for me. So I'm happy with the chairman and after the sponsor, I think it's really
good. And this is an excellent point. You know, we hope people aren't going to just be able to contribute to that base of data. That's even more interesting as well, is that once you have the ability to be the pilot as an exception, there was a second hurdle, which was that any phrases machine that he wanted to use that was the best in the market that was being used by all the other countries, was he was denied the ability to use that because it wasn't an approved device yet by the FDA. And yet it was being manufactured in Colorado. It was the only American apheresis device, so he was relegated to using a 17-year-old apheresis machine because that was the most recent device that had been approved. And so the idea of continuing to report back that data on devices and medicines and so forth, I think is so important. And, you know, just again, the opportunity that some one person in time might get versus another, just by that little bureaucratic thing.
Fascinating. So, thank you, Commissioner. Okay, I'm moving to the CHSM Bill 113 Health and Social Services, urging e-echo for community individual recommendations in the International School of Journalism.
Yes, any objection or comments on that? Any final closing remarks? Well, first let me say, any objections, either on the C9 and the CS Bill 113 with individual recommendations.
I'm curious explain that some of their just something they're surprised how this institution right but when you close off the decision they put it in and we do a lot of research on the steps and the board as well just researching them they're not going to be incentivized or not.
So thank you very much, and thank you, Ms. Ivy, as well for your excellent presentation. We're going to go in that one direction.